So, Dan, you know, you're familiar with the filmmaker Paul Feig.
I am.
He has directed some really, I think, good movies, and his latest is really terrific, and that's the one with Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively called A Simple Favor, and I really enjoyed it. Paul Feig has launched a new female director program titled Powder Keg Fused, a new development incubator for female filmmakers. It's through his digital media company Powder Keg that he started with Laura Fisher. As its first initiative, Powder Keg Fuse selected 6 short films submitted by a group of ethnically diverse women, and all of them will begin production in Los Angeles this coming week. 40 female directors were invited to submit their ideas based on a prompt, and the chosen 6 were paired with top producers and casting directors to develop their short. When the short is completed, it will be distributed as part of the Fuse anthology, a total of 30 minutes in length, all tied together thematically. The last section of the prompt said, "This mosaic of neighborhoods, each with its own distinct microculture, is the source of endless conversation and comedy. Finding your own identity in this city might take 1 or 2 moves, but once you find it, you are home." Each of these women has a very unique comedic voice and aesthetic, and we are thrilled to be able to bring their short film to life. These are talented directors ready for the next step in their career, and we hope this is the beginning of a long working relationship with each of them, said Feig and Fisher in a statement. Most recently, Powder Keg finished production on the short film form scripted series East of La Brea, created by Samir Gardezi. Currently, it is in production on a half-hour scripted comedy at YouTube Premium and has a multi-plot deal at EKO. And so they've got their selections. And so Powder Keg Fuse is this thing that that Paul Feig has gotten behind to encourage more women and to make movies. And that's always a good thing. It's always a good thing. I want to talk about some of the best female directors out there. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you'd like to join us. Some of their best movies and some of the best movies directed by women. That's what we're going to be talking about here. And if you would like to join us, 312-981-7200 for your thoughts on the best movies directed by women and the best female directors. The first woman that pops into my head when I think female directors is Kathryn Bigelow. She's the only woman to ever win the Best Director Oscar. She won it for The Hurt Locker, and deservedly so. And then was it last year Greta Gerwig was nominated for Lady Bird? And that was, you know, was there another female director nominated last year? Why am I thinking that there? Because I know Greta
Gerwig was Anna DuVernay. Is that how you pronounce her name? Anna DuVernay, was she nominated for Selma the year before?
Yeah. So, there are more women now making movies. It's still mostly men, but women are now really stepping forward and making a lot of really terrific movies and strides. And Paul Feig is one of these guys who's been behind that because, you know, he makes movies with a lot of really strong female roles and a lot of really strong female characters, and many of them written by women. He directed Bridesmaids. So this is a really cool thing that he's doing. But Kathryn Bigelow, man, I mean, she's just, you know, she made Near Dark, which is a movie, you know, this time of year, you should be watching Near Dark. Because it is truly one of the best. I think it's the best vampire movie ever made, even though they never use the word vampire in it. They never use it. But it's like a combination, sort of like vampire Wild Bunch combination. A truly original movie, beautifully directed, and with so many great moments and performances. The great, late, great Bill Paxton, the incredible Lance Hendrickson, Jenny Wright. Just a beautiful, beautiful movie. And she also made a movie called The Loveless with Willem Dafoe. She would go on to do Point Break. I mean, come on, man. Point Break? The woman directed Point Break. One of the greatest movies of all time. She did Strange Days, which like four people saw when it was in the theater, which is really too bad because that's a great. Have you seen Strange Days, Dan?
I have not.
It's Ralph Fiennes, Angela Bassett, Juliette Lewis. It takes place on New Year's Eve, 1999. Movie came out in 1995, so it was at that point it was a futuristic movie, and it is a remarkable piece of work, and I mean insanely well made, like really. And the thing about Kathryn Bigelow is that she makes the kind of movies that are really typically associated with guys, because she makes, you know, like badass action movies and really intense films. You know, like The Hurt Locker is just, you know, an extraordinary piece of work. And she also directed Zero Dark Thirty, which was great. And then the criminally overlooked movie from last year, Detroit, which was not a pleasant movie to watch. It was very, very, very intense and kind of a hard film to watch, you know. The events that take place in that movie are not pleasant. But it's a great movie nonetheless and beautifully made. I think that movie, for some reason, I don't know, I can't remember what studio distributed Detroit, but the idea to release that movie in July was really stupid. That's not a summer movie. Like, you know, I mean, a lot of people go to movies in the summer to get away from it all, and the big action movies and the stupid, you know, comic book movies and wacky comedies, and the tentpole stuff usually comes out. And then here's this really, really long, very heavy, dark drama based on reality and riots and race. Hey, let's release it in July. No. Huge mistake. That should have been released in late fall. The studio behind it should have gotten behind it and did an Oscar campaign for it and pushed it for nominations because it was that kind of movie. And to have Kathryn Bigelow, who, you know, won the Hurt Locker won Best Picture. She won Best Director. She was nominated again for Zero Dark Thirty. And Zero Dark Thirty was nominated for Best Picture as well. How do you release Detroit in July and then don't even bother to do some sort of campaign for it? They did send out screeners. Oh, there you go. I got a screener for it. So, but yeah, Kathryn Bigelow, when I think female directors, and there are a ton of them, and that's what we're going to be talking about, movies directed by women that you really love and female directors. And our thanks goes out to Paul Feig, who I just think is just, the guy's great. I had him on my show before he started directing movies.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah. He was also one of the guys who created Freaks and Geeks along with Apatow. And he had written a book. Paul Feig had written a book. And it was right around the same time 40-Year-Old Virgin came out. Dan, maybe you can look it up. And it was about being a virgin. Like it was a memoir of his. And I just thought it was really hilarious that right at the same time, these guys who did Freaks and Geeks, both of their projects at that time were about being a virgin.
Superstud, or How I Became a 24-Year-Old Virgin.
There it is. That's when I had him on to talk about that book, and he was fantastic. He was great. And that was before he started making movies. And at then it was right. We talked about, you know, why is Judd Apatow making a movie called 40-Year-Old Virgin, and why are you writing a book like this? And he's like, we were both losers for a very, very long time. So, and now Paul Feig is like a hero to the female side of filmmaking, and I think that's great. All right, let's take a break. Everybody, hang on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. We're talking about great filmmakers who just happen to be women. So we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. And there are plenty of really talented female directors out there. Let's celebrate that tonight. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 5 a.m. It's Friday. That means Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies and You Big Dummy all coming up. And get your requests in at 312-981-7200, or you can call us right now or text us, 312-981-7200. We're talking about great movies directed by women, great female directors. in honor of Paul Feig announcing that he has put together a new program designed to help female directors. And that's what we're talking about. So 312-981-7200. Here's Emo on WGN. Hi, Emo.
Hey, how you doing, Nick? I got one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Penny Marshall, A League of Her Own.
Yeah, she's Penny Marshall's directed a lot of movies. And
But look at the cast she had in the one-liners.
Yeah, she had a ton of people in that movie. It was shot here. Shot here in Chicago.
Yeah Wrigley.
Yep. And
there's no crying in baseball.
That's right. All right, Emo. Thanks, man.
All right, take it easy.
What were some of the other ones that Penny Marshall directed besides that? I'm trying to think.
I think she's five or six on that list.
Oh, right here. Oh, Big. She directed Big. She directed The Preacher's Wife and some of the other ones. But yeah, Big was a good. I forgot she directed Big. Yeah, so that's Laverne became a filmmaker. People really love A League of Their Own. I'm not one of them.
Why not?
I haven't seen it since it came out, and I just disliked it. Maybe I'd feel better about it. Maybe I'd feel different now because I've only seen it the one time when it came out, and I just was like, I remember thinking that it was kind of miscast. I thought the screenplay was weak. I just remember the only thing I remember about it was, it does have both Lori Petty and Madonna in it. So right there, that's like, you know, that's like a big plus for me because I love Lori Petty and I love Madonna. Yeah. Lori Petty, by the way, in Point Break. And I just remember the only thing that I remember from that movie. I mean, obviously, besides there's no crying in baseball and some of the other, you know, things that have become reasonably iconic that came out of that. I just remember Tom Hanks peeing. That's the only thing I remember.
That is a fantastic scene.
That's the only thing I remember from that movie. It was like he takes a very long whiz in that movie. And that says something about my sensibility. The only thing that I took from that movie, you know, which was a movie about female empowerment and all that stuff.
I mean, it does go on for 2.5 minutes. My brother and I timed it one time. Yeah, because we watched that movie constantly growing up.
Yeah.
They made a point of making it long. So you
enjoy that movie then?
Yeah, we're big fans. I think, to your point, I was the right age. My brother and I were playing baseball at that time.
Oh, sure.
I was the older brother. He was the younger brother. We had kind of similar personalities to Gina Davis and Lori Petty. He was the more like, woo, let's go. And I was more like, hey, slow down.
Yeah.
And, so I think we connected on that level. And we were playing baseball every day. And so.
And
then seeing it Wrigley Field and all that stuff. So, I mean, it reminds me a lot of Remember the Titans, where it's like, I know it's cliched and I know there are plot holes and I know there's a bunch of stuff wrong, but I just love it so much.
Yeah.
I have blinders on, you know?
Sure. I understand that. I totally understand that. I mean, we all have movies like that.
Right.
Where it's like, I don't care what people, I don't care. I know it's dumb. You know, I know it's not great, but I saw it at the right time.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was that way last week when I screened Phantasm.
Sure.
I was like, look, there's some really, you know, really illogical things in this movie that make absolutely no sense. And I acknowledged all of them, and I said, and you know what? I don't care. I don't care. Because there were, you know, first-timers who saw Phantasm, and I had to, like, because there are parts in the movie that are pretty ridiculous. And so I was like, I don't care. You know what? The movie's the movie's a fever dream. All the logic makes sense to me, and I don't care. I was 13 when I saw it, and it changed my life, so shut up. All right, let's break. We got the news coming up next, and I want to hear from you guys. Great movies directed by women, great female directors. 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got all our Friday features coming up in a little bit. But we would love to hear from you, 312-981-7200, if you would like to join us. We are talking about great movies directed by women, great female directors. We were talking a little bit. We mentioned Penny Marshall, mentioned Catherine Bigelow. Let me throw another name out there who I think is one of the best female directors ever. Jane Campion. Jane Campion is responsible for, most notably, I guess, The Piano, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, with an incredible performance by Holly Hunter. Harvey Keitel is great in that movie. Anna Paquin, that's where we got where Anna Paquin came from, and that is one of my favorite movies ever, with an incredible soundtrack and just so beautifully made and hypnotic. Jane Campion is an incredible filmmaker. The first movie I remember seeing that she directed was this really crazy movie called Sweetie, which featured another incredible female lead performance, and it was a great movie. Angel at My Table, one of my favorite movies of 1990. And then The Piano, she did Portrait of a Lady with Nicole Kidman, Holy Smoke with Kate Winslet, In the Cut with Meg Ryan and Mark Ruffalo. She did Bright Star, and also was one of the creators and the director of Top of the Lake. Both seasons of Top of the Lake, which was an amazing show, that the TV show that she was responsible for too. I think Jane Campion's one of the best filmmakers around, and I just think that she makes great movies. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're talking about great movies directed by women and great female directors. 301 area code says Ida Lupino was one of the earliest female directors during the golden age of Hollywood. She made some really good films, especially The Hitchhiker. Yeah, she's a great, terrific actress too. Ida Lupino was a terrific actress and a groundbreaking in terms of that. Like you mentioned, the golden age of Hollywood. You think women as filmmakers and directors are in the minority now? My God, go back to that time. There weren't that many. Steve says for overall talent, Elaine May, great director, writer. Yeah, I love Elaine May. I love her, and I think she's a great director, on her own. And she also, she wrote great screenplays. And one of my favorites is, she adapted Primary Colors to film, and then Mike Nichols directed it. And that was, again, bringing Nichols and May together to do anything is awesome. But to have them, have her write the screenplay and him direct Primary Colors, which I think is one of the best political movies ever made, movies about politics ever made. But yeah, Elaine May is a terrific director. And, here's the thing. Ishtar's good. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care, man. Ishtar is a good movie. And she caught so much hell for that movie. She went way over budget. She shot way too much footage. But she's like, as a director, she's a bit of a perfectionist. And, you had two big Hollywood stars in that movie. And you had to pay them extra. And it was considered one of the biggest flops, and it was a big flop, but I don't care. It's a good movie. Dan, have you ever seen Ishtar?
I have not.
It's funny, man. It's good. And I think both Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman are very funny in it. I think it's solid. It's well directed. And man, the songs are great. I mean, they're terrible, but they're great. And Paul Williams did the music for that movie. He did the songs. And I interviewed Paul Williams. I had him live in the Showcase studio over at the Trib building some years ago. They released a documentary about Paul Williams, and I've always been a big Paul Williams fan. I think he's one of the greatest songwriters that's ever lived, and my mom's a Paul Williams freak, so I brought her down to the station, and she got all of her records signed by Paul Williams, got a picture with him and all that stuff. She was beyond thrilled, and he couldn't have been a cooler dude. And he told me afterwards, he was like, I don't think I've ever done an interview where the interviewer kept going back to ask more questions about Ishtar. So I kept bringing it back to Ishtar. I was like, listen, let's go back and start talking about Ishtar again. And at first he was like, what? Because I don't think anybody, I would doubt that anybody asks him questions about Ishtar. That's like the last thing you do. The guy's written so many classic, songs, like other artists have covered, and he's really a prolific and insanely talented songwriter. And I wanted to talk about the bad songs that he wrote for Ishtar. And he said it was the hardest thing he ever had to do. He said, because it's hard to write bad songs. And he didn't mean that, in a conceited kind of way. He said it's just to specifically write what are going to be bad songs was the biggest challenge he ever had. And the songs are terrible in Ishtar, and they're awesome. Telling the truth can be dangerous business. I'm telling you. So, yeah, I agree, Steve. Steve texted that one in, Elaine May. She's fantastic. Doc in Kansas City says, Amy Heckerling. Yeah, Amy Heckerling directed, I guess she's best known for Fast Times at Ridgemont High, but She also directed Clueless. I think that's a much better movie than Fast Times at Ridgemont High. But she's known for some pretty. Let's take a look at what she's directed. And she's done anything lately? Red Oaks, a TV series. She's doing a lot of TV. Suburgatory. She directed a few episodes of Gossip Girl. God bless her. She directed Clueless, Look Who's Talking, and Look Who's Talking To. Oh my God, I forgot she directed European Vacation. Oh no. Ooh. National Lampoon's European Vacation. Ugh. Fast Times at Ridgemont High. She also directed Johnny Dangerously. Dan, have you seen Johnny Dangerously?
I have.
Because that's one that's been on cable 9 million times. I thought Johnny Dangerously was funny. I know it got bad reviews when it came out. I remember how it was received. It was not received well. But that movie was so funny. Joe Piscopo was funny in it. That's how good it was. But that was a funny movie. I don't care what anybody says. I thought Johnny Dangerously was funny. So yeah, Amy Heckerling. 301.
She actually did a movie with Alicia Silverstone recently where Alicia Silverstone was like a vampire.
Oh, was it called Vamp?
Probably. It was on some cable network. I only watched like 10 minutes of it, but I was just kind of struck. It was kind of a direct to DVD type movie, and
It's called Vamps.
Yeah, but it was charming in parts, and so I looked at the information, obviously, and I saw they were together. I'm like, oh, look at them getting
they're back together. It's Alicia Silverstone. Kristen Ritter is the other lead. You know who else is in this?
Who's that?
Larry Wilmore.
Really? I did not see him in the parts I saw.
I wasn't aware that he did movies. He's been in, I guess, I'm now looking it up. He was also in Dinner for Schmucks. He's been on Insecure. He's a creator of Insecure, by the way. One of the creators of Insecure. But most of the stuff that he's done is TV stuff. That's why I'm surprised to see I saw him in the movie. But Larry Wilmore from the Nightly Show, which should have lasted longer, I think, personally. So, all right. Well, there's Amy Heckerling. 301 says Patty Jenkins did a terrific job directing 2017's Wonder Woman. Yeah. And a lot of people thought that she should have been nominated for an Academy Award for that. They were thinking, but it didn't get nominated for anything, which a lot of people were upset about. But yeah, Patty Jenkins, she did Monster, which got Charlize Theron her Academy Award with Christina Ricci. And that was critically acclaimed. And then it took her 15 years to make another movie. I think I don't know if there was anything in between that. She directed a couple episodes of The Killing, but her only two features were Monster and Wonder Woman. And I believe she's doing Wonder Woman 2. That would be stupid for her not to.
Although there was there because if I remember the story correctly, and I might not have all the details to go, but there was unfortunately something that a lot of female directors run into where they lowballed her on her fee, and she had to fight to get the money she deserved. Because obviously, in addition to being a really good movie, that made bonzo bucks at the box office.
Huge.
I mean, I remember how every week when we'd have the guys on talking about how it was still in the top 10,
still in the top 10.
Months and months after it had been initially released.
And it's funny because it was one of these deals, because as people, regular listeners know, I go to the movies with my parents every Saturday, and we usually go to the theater in Skokie, the Village Crossing Theater in Skokie, because all the movies that come out usually open there, and they have, if we're going to see a big movie, they have an IMAX screen and a Dolby Cinema. And so that's, I like to see, like tomorrow, we're going to see First Man, and we're going to see it in IMAX. We're doing a double feature tomorrow, because they're both movies that my parents really, really want to see. So we're going to see First Man and then Bad Times at El Royale, which I am unbelievably excited about. Drew Goddard needs to make more movies, Dan. I mean, if you're, the guy makes Cabin in the Woods and then doesn't make one until now.
It's pretty crazy.
And Cabin in the Woods, man. If you guys have not seen Cabin in the Woods, truly one of the most original and best like horror satires of the past 20 years. And I'm not exaggerating. Chris Hemsworth's in this one, too. Yeah. And he wrote The Martian. Potato poop. He wrote The Martian. So that's what we're seeing. But anyway, when we were going to the movies that summer, when Wonder Woman was out, I can't tell you the number of times running through the hallways of the theaters, because you got to walk down the hallways. There's 18 theaters there, so you got to sometimes you got to walk around corners and stuff, and then you get out of the movie and you're in the lobby, maybe you go to the bathroom, you're waiting for people out in the lobby. I can't tell you the number of little girls that were there every week. I mean, we're talking a month after the movie was out. Every week there'd be little girls with like either dressed as Wonder Woman or with Wonder Woman t-shirts and their moms with Wonder Woman t-shirts. It was really inspiring. It was really, really cool. And it was a phenomenon. You're right, Dan. I mean, it was every week. And here, you know, they just announced now, like, so, you know, not to bring Patty Jenkins back for the sequel would have been really stupid and short-sighted. And then they just announced yesterday that Ryan Coogler is going to come back to do Black Panther 2. Now, who else would come in to do? That's the other thing. It's like, who are you going to hire somebody else to make that movie? You know, and again, you want to talk about a movie that made some huge money. Who else is going to write and direct it? Come on. Was that even a thought process? Did anybody else? Let's get Henry Winkler to direct it. He directed Cop and a Half. So the... Was it Cop and a Half? Did he direct Cop and a Half? He directed, I think he directed Cop. Maybe he didn't. Cop and a Half or something along those lines.
Yeah, it was Cop and a Half.
He did direct Cop and a Half. Okay. Hey, look, here's another Burt movie. Look up Rent-A-Cop. See who, I can't remember who directed Rent-A-Cop. That was another, it's Rent-A-Cop.
With Liza Minnelli.
Yeah.
Directed by Jerry London.
Oh, well, that, okay.
Bert did portray a cop quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was in a ton of cop movies. And private investigator stuff, too. So, hey, you know, Burt Reynolds also portrayed a convict playing football in a movie. Did you know
get
that?
Get out of town.
Did you know that one, Dan?
Can I see this anywhere sometime soon?
Just coincidentally, I am hosting a screening of The Longest Yard in honor of Burt. And it's one of my favorite Burt Reynolds movies, and I think one of the best Burt Reynolds movies ever made. And we happen to be screening it at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly Movico, Tuesday, November 13th. It's $10 to get in. Parking is free. It's the remastered 4K digital version of it. A very rarely screened movie. This is your chance to see The Longest Yard on the big screen, and it's very rarely shown on cable. So we're really thrilled about this in honoring Burt's memory. Showing The Longest Yard. And if you've never seen it, you should come out and see it. If you've never seen it on the big screen, it's going to be fantastic. If you've never seen it with an audience, because that movie is a crowd pleaser. The Longest Yard is a true, true crowd pleaser to see with a nice big crowd having a good time. So come on out Tuesday, November 13th. $10. Parking is free. AMC Rosemont. And it's Tuesday, November 13th, 7 o'clock. You can show up, have some food, get some food from the concession stand, hang out in the dining room. There's a full bar upstairs. We'll be in the big, beautiful premiere theater with state-of-the-art sound and projection. Big, giant, lush love seats that you can sit on. And I will introduce the movie at 8 o'clock. It will start, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. It's going to be a great time, and that's us remembering the great Burt Reynolds with The Longest Yard, one of the best. From 1974. Great movie. So you can go to amctheaters.com right now and reserve your seats. Reserve them now. They'll be waiting for you on Tuesday, November 13th. So go to amctheaters.com right now and reserve your seats, and we'll see you on Tuesday, November 13th for The Longest Yard. All right, we're going to come back, and we'll talk more great movies directed by women and great female directors. 312-981-7200. We barely scratched the surface here on WGN. All right. Hey, welcome back. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Friday. So coming up are our regular Friday features, Fly Jams Friday, You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies. Those are all coming up. Plus, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. So we are talking about women directors. And great movies directed by ladies. 312-981-7200 for talk or text. 312-981-7200. We've got some We've got some texts that are coming in. We'll get those going in a couple of minutes. But I wanted to mention another woman that I think has directed some great movies, and that, of course, is Sofia Coppola, who emerged from, you know, under the shadow of her father, who only happens to be, you know, one of the greatest filmmakers who's made, you know, some of the greatest movies ever made. I mean, he's responsible for three of the, you know, most classic films of all time, with the two Godfather movies. Well, no, four movies. Apocalypse Now and The Conversation are just some of the movies. And to come out from that shadow, and also, you know, to be, I think, unfairly criticized, and, you know, they really went after her when she was cast in Godfather Part III, and I thought it was really unfair. Because that's a deeply flawed movie, and a lot of the issues that are bad about that movie have nothing to do with her performance at all. But people really went after her, and I thought it was incredibly unfair. Have you seen Godfather Part III?
I have not.
She's not great in it, but there are things in that movie that are much worse than her performance, and to single her out, I thought, was incredibly unfair. And I remember being very angry about it. And then she wasn't in movies, and she would kind of disappear for a really long time. And I think that really had an effect on her. And, you know, and then when she came back behind the camera, people were like, oh, she's going to, and then she makes Lost in Translation. And then you're like, no, okay, shut up. All the people who criticized Sofia Coppola in the past, shut up. Because Lost in Translation is a great film. And I met her. She did, you know, a lot of touring around the country to spread the word about that movie. Because, you know, again, she had to come out from beneath the shadow of her father and her famous family. Not just her father, but she comes from, you know, obviously a big famous family. But to have that tarnished reputation of having ruined, you know, the guy. They were saying, oh, she ruined the whole series. Shut up. But I don't know. I mean, and then she came to town. Gary and I, Gary Lee Wright and I, interviewed her, and she was lovely. I mean, just so great and gracious, and she made a great movie, and she was just absolutely lovely. She couldn't be sweeter and more, you know, she was very sincere about, you know, how much we liked them, because we loved the movie. I mean, we just kept going on and on about the movie. But she was most excited because we were filling in for somebody during the day. I think it was Williams, I think. We were filling in for Williams. So we were in the Showcase studio, and she came in, and we did the whole interview with her and everything. It was fantastic. But she was really just most excited about going across the street to Billy Goat because she wanted a cheeseburger. She's a big fan of Saturday Night Live, and she kept saying, I can't wait, because after I'm done the interview with you guys, I'm going across the street for a cheeseburger. And I'm like, all right, that's cool. So not only is Lost in Translation a great movie, but she made The Virgin Suicides, which is a really terrific movie. I love Marie Antoinette. I know a lot of people don't like it. I adore that movie. I was not crazy about Somewhere, which is the movie she made with Stephen Dorff. And I didn't like The Beguiled, her last movie, simply because I love the original so much. You know what I mean? I'm just a huge fan. I am a huge fan of the original movie. I think it's an incredible movie. And she tried a different approach to it that I don't think worked. I think the material is perfect for her, like perfectly suited for like her sensibility and her style and everything. I just don't think, I thought her approach was wrong. Especially considering the way that Don Siegel had directed the original. But I'm just like, you know, and the casting was great. Like, and there was so many great people in the movie, in The Beguiled. And I love, you know, Colin Farrell and Nicole Kidman and all the other actresses that were in it. But that's one of the only ones. But I think she's great. I think Sofia Coppola is fantastic. And, So it's just so unfair the way she got treated after Godfather Part III. It's ridiculous. 815 area code. Diane Keaton is a director. I loved Unstrung Heroes. Unstrung Heroes is a terrific movie. You know who's really good in that movie, Dan?
I'm unfamiliar with it.
Kramer.
Really?
Michael Richards. It's a really good movie. She also directed a weird documentary called Heaven. And I'm trying to remember if she directed another. I love Diane Keaton. She's another one of those women that is just untouchable, in my opinion. I mean, I loved her from the beginning. And I love how crazy and outspoken she is now. I love the way she dresses. There's everything about Diane Keaton I love. I think she's fantastic. She's made some terrible movies, but she's a great actress. And she's in one of my all-time favorite movies, Shoot the Moon, which is the best movie. This is a real pleasant thing to say. It's the best movie ever made about divorce. Her and Albert Finney, Karen Allen, Peter Weller. It's a classic. Alan Parker directed it. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and it's a devastating movie. It's not. You don't want to watch it and go, "Hey, I'm in the mood for something happy. Let's put on Shoot the Moon." But Diane Keaton is extraordinary in it, and she's great behind the camera. Unstrung Heroes, you should check it. I'm trying to remember who else was in it. I remember Michael Richards was in it, and I remember really liking it a lot. So, anyway, Diane Keaton, somebody mentions. Good one. 224 area code says, for years after seeing it, my friends and I still quote Johnny Dangerously. All right, let's take a break for the news. All right. Welcome back. Hi, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Friday. That means all the regular Friday features, Fly Jams Friday. You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies all coming up. You want to get your request into DJ Shagru, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. That's also the number to call or text us about great female filmmakers. We've been talking about directors who happen to be women and great movies directed by women. 312-981-7200. It's all started because Paul Feig, the director of Bridesmaids and A Simple Favor and Ghostbusters, has started a program to help female filmmakers get going, get started. And so we thought we'd talk a little bit about great female directors. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 815 area code says, writer, director, producer Kay Cannon from Braidwood, Illinois. She's only directed one movie. She did a lot of TV work. But she directed Blockers from earlier this year, which is a movie that I found surprisingly funny. I I was not looking forward to that movie at all. But I thought that movie was pretty funny. Let's see. What about he was driving from KC? Says Jodie Foster. She directed a few. Yes, she directed three movies. Her first one was Little Man Tate, which she had a good year that year because that came out in 91. That was the same year as Silence of the Lambs. So she had a good year. She her directorial debut, which also got really great reviews and was a pretty big hit. She acted in that as well. And then she ended up, you know, in the movie that would eventually win Best Picture. She won Best Actress that year. It's a good year for her. She also directed one of my favorite movies of all time that I watch every Thanksgiving, Home for the Holidays, which was mentioned when we talked about movies that make you cry. And she directed The Beaver, which is a really good movie. Mel Gibson has a beaver puppet that kind of speaks for him. He's got he's got some mental issues. And she was in that one as well, and she directed that. And that was a good movie, too, surprisingly good. She's a good director. Jodie Foster's a really good director. And she's directed a lot of TV stuff, too. She's done episodic television and things like that. So, let's see. 815 area code says, my favorite female director is my wife, who directed the short film Life of Bob. Her name is Jane Spencer. All right, Jane, cool. Chris in Elk Grove says, a couple of great female directors, in my opinion, are Karen Kusama, who directed The Invitation. She also directed Girl Fight, that was the breakthrough for Michelle Rodriguez. She's got a movie coming out, too. And Eric saw it. He reviewed it on one of from one of the film fests. I think it was Toronto, and he said it wasn't as good as her last movie. Karen Kusama's last movie was The Invitation, which is a great, great, great movie that has a stunning ending. The final shot of that movie is just ridiculous. But she's got a movie that I think is making the rounds.
Destroyer.
Oh, and that's with is that Nicole Kidman? Is that what that is?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, he actually was, you know, when he didn't actually full on review it because he didn't know what to think of it yet. He wanted to see it a second time. And I think that's getting some buzz for Nicole Kidman. So, yeah, she's a good director. Mary Harron, who directed American Psycho. Yeah, Mary Harron also directed The Notorious Betty Page and I Shot Andy Warhol. She's a good director. And anybody who could make a good movie out of that book, out of American Psycho, is great, in my opinion. Because she took a terrible, offensive book and made it really great and really dark and funny. And, of course, Christian Bale is great in it. And then Mary Lambert, who directed the original Pet Sematary. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the original Pet Sematary. I did, however, I just watched the trailer for the new one because they're doing a remake. And I know Vic is terrified of that book. Like, Vic, didn't you say that when you read Pet Sematary, you were a kid, right?
Yeah,
you read
it? I think I was. It was preteen. I wasn't a teenager yet.
Yeah,
I just remember having to put that book out my mom in the kitchen when I would go to bed because that's how freaked out I was by that book. I was terrified of that book.
It's a scary. I think it's the scariest book that Stephen King has ever written.
I followed that up with, I think, Tommyknockers after that one, which was not nearly as scary.
Oh, no. I truly think that Pet Sematary is the scariest book he's ever written, and it even freaked him out. He was like, I can't believe I'm writing this. Like, he would have to stop writing. Like, most of us who read that book, and you had to actually put it in a different room. I just had to put it down. Like, there were times when I was like, I have to stop.
About it in his book on writing, which is a great book.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he had some feelings for while he was writing that
book. Yeah, while he was writing, he's like, what am I doing? Where am I going?
Right.
What kind of road am I going down here?
That's awesome. It's just like he channeled, just opened something up, and there goes the words onto the pages.
Yeah, and it is a really scary book. The movie, the original movie, sucks. It's not good. I hope the remake.
The trailer looks pretty good
for the remake. It does. It looks. I mean, it looks. You know, I will say this: the one thing about the original Pet Sematary that Mary Lambert directed is Fred Gwynne is awesome in it. Fred Gwynne is the king.
You know, I agree. And also the one thing I remember from the movie was the highway.
Yeah.
The scenes that they would use to convey how fast they would go through in front of their house. And it looks like they did a pretty good job of this new movie as well.
Well, in the trailer for the new movie, the first appearance of the truck is terrifying.
Right.
It's like, whoa.
Right, right.
But here's the thing that one of the things that they did wrong. I mean, I don't know if you remember in the book when Gage gets hit by the truck,
right?
Because your kid gets hit by. Well, the plot of the movie is that there's this pet cemetery in the woods behind the house that they just bought, and there's this legend that if you bury a pet back there, it will come back from the dead. And so they bury their cat. You know, they bury the cat in the pet cemetery, and the cat comes back, but the cat's changed. The cat's like evil now. And so they have to deal with that. So the cat's all weird and acting evil and getting worse as the time goes by. So the personality of the cat changes to like evil. So clearly something has happened since being brought back from the dead. So one of their kids runs out into the middle of the highway and gets hit by a truck. And so the father, in all his grief, you know, has been warned not to do this, but he buries the kid in the pet cemetery. It's like a toddler. Buries this kid in the pet cemetery. Kid comes back and is a maniac and starts killing people. And so that's the plot of the movie. But I don't know if you remember that's the plot of the book. And in the movie, when the kid comes back, and by the way, the kid from Pet Sematary, I told you this already, right, Dan? He was also in New Nightmare. I got drunk with him a few years ago at Flashback.
Oh, there you go.
The kid from Pet Sematary. He's an adult now.
I forgot that.
Yeah. This was a few years ago when I was still a drinking man and did a lot of drinking when I was at the Flashback weekend. And we were standing by the zombie bus partying in the parking lot, which is what you did at Flashback weekend. Still do. I don't, but the other people do. And I got drunk with him. Nico, I'm trying to remember his name. I can't remember the kid's name. Nico, something. He's not a kid. He's in his 30s now. So anyway, now I don't know if you remember in the book, Vic, when Cage comes back, he looks like he's been hit by a truck. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like in the movie, he comes back, he's got like a little scar on his head and he's like a cute little toddler.
Right.
And I remember going, wait a minute, hold on a second. In the book, he was all screwed up. I mean, he was the kid was hit by a semi. And when he comes back from the dead, he looks like he's been hit by a semi. But in the movie, he's all cute. And I was like, no. But, you know, again, Fred Gwynne. But you know who's playing the Fred Gwynne role, which is good casting and a terrific actor, just John Lithgow. He's playing the Fred Gwynne role in the remake. So, I mean, that could be interesting. Dan, could you look up the guy's name? He was in Pet Sematary, played Gage, and he was in New Nightmare, and I think it's Nico. I think his name is Nico, but I can't remember. The last time I saw him, I was drunk, so it doesn't We were both drunk, so it doesn't matter. It was, I think it was the 2000...
Miko Hughes.
There you go. I wasn't too far off. He was... this was, I think, was 2013, I think, at that convention, 2013, I think it was. And Dale Midkiff, Dale Midkiff, who played the father in Pet Sematary, he played Elvis in Elvis and Me.
There are parts of Pet Sematary where his lines are delivered almost in as Elvis. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I think I did catch it. Because I saw the last time I saw Pet Sematary was that, because they screened flashback, Mike screened it. We went over to the Rosemont, AMC Rosemont, which was Movieco then, and watched it, and they introduced it, like Dale Midkiff, and I want to say another cast member was in it, and the kid. Well, he's not a kid, he was an adult. And they introduced the movie, and that was the first time I'd seen it since it came out. And it still sucks. And I remember this was 5 years ago was the last time I saw it, and it was not good. But I went up to Dale Midkiff because he played Elvis in the... It was a terrible miniseries based on Priscilla Presley's book. You guys remember this book? Priscilla Presley wrote a book called Elvis and Me. And then they made a miniseries out of it. Like, it was a TV miniseries. And Dale Midkiff played Elvis in it. I can't remember who played Priscilla. You can look that one up too, Dan. Elvis and Me is what it was called. And it was a TV miniseries. I think it was on NBC. And Dale Midkiff played Elvis. And so when I met Dale Midkiff, because they have like a meet and greet thing every year at Flashback.
Susan Walters.
Okay, I don't even know idea. And Dale Midkiff played Elvis, right?
You are correct.
Okay, so when I met Dale Midkiff at the meet and greet thing where all the celebrities from the Flashback weekend... they have a party, you know, like a reception thing for about an hour where all the people who show up and pay for the ultimate package, you know, which includes, you know, like your discount tickets. It includes better seating in at screenings. And it includes your meet and greet with the celebrities. So there's like a party. They have a cash bar, and the celebrities come in and you can walk up and talk to them and meet them. And these are the people that paid, you know, the fans who paid money to do that. So they have this meet and greet, and I'm always there. When I came up to Dale Midkiff, I remember I came up to Dale Midkiff, and I said, "Hey, man, you're the greatest Elvis ever." And he goes, "Thank you. Thank you very much." I was lying, of course, because the greatest Elvis ever is Kurt Russell. Hey, Dan. Kurt Russell's playing Santa.
What?
Look this up. Kurt Russell's playing Santa. I got the Netflix. It's a Netflix thing. I got the trailer sent to me. It's called The Christmas Chronicles, and it starts in November 22nd. It starts streaming on Netflix, and Kurt Russell plays Santa. It's going to be the greatest Christmas special of all time.
The story of sister and brother Kate and Teddy Pierce, whose Christmas Eve plan to catch Santa Claus on camera turns into an unexpected journey that most kids could only dream about. Oh.
I watched the trailer for it, and Kurt Russell is not wearing a fat suit or anything. It's just Kurt Russell with a big, you know, big beard. And at one point they go, "You don't look anything like that." And because there's a billboard outside, and it's like, "You don't look anything like that, Santa." And he goes, "Yeah, well, the billboard adds 80 pounds. Like, what? I watched the trailer for it. It looks crazy.
There's a lot of people in this. Kimberly William Paisley, Oliver Hudson, Lamorne Morris. Wow.
Yeah, well, Oliver Hudson is in it because his father-in-law is in it. So that, well, not father, not married. Goldie Hawn and him are not married, but his, you know, right, sort of father-in-law is in it. Or stepfather. I'm sorry, stepfather. So, but yeah. No, I mean, I saw, they sent me the trailer, and I'm like, wait a minute. Kurt Russell is playing Santa? This is going to be the greatest Santa story ever. So I can't. I'm going to watch it immediately. It starts streaming on Netflix November 22nd. Thank you. Thank you, Netflix. It looks crazy. All right, let's take a break. We'll take a break here, and then when we come back, we've got more great female directors and great movies directed by women. We got a ton here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're all very excited about Kurt Russell playing Santa Claus. Or at least I am. Oh, man. And you know that's his own beard. You know,
you,
I mean, come on. You've seen the thing. You know the beard capabilities of Kurt Russell. He's got his facial hair in Hateful Eight. Bone Tomahawk. This man can grow some facial hair. Kurt Russell doesn't need a fake beard to play Santa Claus. Are you kidding me? He probably grew it overnight. That's how manly Kurt Russell is.
He sneezed.
He sneezed, and that beard appeared. Anyway, The Christmas Chronicles, everybody. It's on Netflix in November. That's going to be the greatest thing ever. All right, well, welcome back. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are talking about great movies directed by women and the best female directors. And we want to we get a bunch more here. Sarah Polley, who is an actress and a Canadian.
Canadian Bill literally just texted.
Oh, he did? Sarah Polley, who is a great, a really, really terrific actress in her own right, has directed some really terrific movies. She directed a movie called Stories We Tell, Away From Her. Take This Waltz, which I think is a particularly great movie. She's also, by all accounts, she showed up for the very first Chicago Film Critics Festival when they showed her movie Stories We Tell. And from all accounts, from Eric and everybody who was there, said that she was the nicest and funniest woman ever. But she's just tremendous actress in addition to that, and starred in a lot of Canadian movies and the Dawn of the Dead remake, which is surprisingly good. You know, Dan, I went into that movie. Oh, man.
Yeah, that had to be.
No. I just was like, no, you can't. How dare you? And it's different, but it's good. It's good. Zombies shouldn't be fast. I will say that. Zombies are not fast. That's a mistake. Any movie that has fast zombies, no. But it was really good. It was well made. Sarah Polley was great in it. You know who was really great in it? Ty Burrell. From Modern Family. He's fantastic in the Dawn of the Dead remake. He's hilarious in it. But yeah, Sarah Polley, she's something, man. I would love to mention Julie Taymor. Julie Taymor, who is known as a musical theater director and artist. She directed Frida. A Frida Kahlo film with Salma Hayek, and that's a good movie. She did A Midsummer Night's Dream, but she also directed one of my favorite movies that everybody hates, and it's Across the Universe, the Beatles movie. Have you seen Across the Universe, Dan?
I have not.
Well, nobody really has. And I still catch flack for liking that movie. People are like Eric and Colin, they make fun of me constantly for liking that movie. Maybe not so much Colin, but Eric does. You know who else likes it? My friend Sergio Mims. He's been on the show before. Sergio, he's a film critic here in town, been around forever, and he makes movies and stuff. And he appears on podcasts a lot with Eric. And he and I get picked on by the critical community for being big fans of Across the Universe. I saw it 3 times in the theater. I got it at home on DVD. I love that movie, and I love what they did with the Beatles music in it. I love that movie. And Julie Taymor, I thought, directed the hell out of it. She also directed Shakespeare with Anthony Hopkins. Titus. She did Titus Andronicus. It was just called Titus. She did a great job with that too. So she's a good filmmaker. Kimberly Pierce, who directed Boys Don't Cry. She also directed Stop Loss, which was okay, but she did the terrible remake of Carrie. Which just, and this is, you know, something, you know, that Chloe Grace Moretz now is sort of making a career out of starring in unnecessary horror remakes. I don't know if you know that or not. Did you know that?
I heard.
She's in Let Me In, which was the unnecessary remake of Let the Right One In. And it sucked. She was in Carrie, which is the unnecessary remake of the 1976 Carrie. Then it sucked. And she's in Suspiria, which I don't know if it's unnecessary because I haven't seen it yet. So I guess that's like a thing now. You know what else she was in, Dan?
What's that?
As a little kid, she was in the remake of Amityville Horror. So there you go.
Wow.
That's like four unnecessary horror remakes starring Chloe Grace Moretz. I love her, though. I think she's great. But and I got to say, I hear really great things about Suspiria. It's not at all. They say it's not like the original, and then the director went out of his way to change it. And I always, you know, I'm Italian. I should know how to pronounce this guy's last name. It's Luda. He directed Call Me By Your Name and A Bigger Splash. So he directed the Suspiria, and it's one of his favorite movies. And it's completely, they say it's completely different in so many ways. I mean, visually and the story changes. They change the story. They use some of the characters and some of the basic plot elements. But they change it. And I'll tell you, one of the big changes is the damn thing is 2 hours and 40 minutes long, which makes it an hour longer than the original. So, but I hear some really screwed up stuff in it, though. Like people freaking out during screenings of it. Like it's a really twisted, crazy, violent movie. So, let's see. We've got Kelly Reichardt, who is one of my favorites. She directed Wendy and Lucy, which was the movie that got mentioned in the crying movies. That's the one with Michelle Williams and her dog, where she's looking for her dog. Really simple, lovely movie. She worked with Michelle Williams a lot. She did Night Move. She did Meek's Cut Off. Certain Women. That's her. You know, Drew Barrymore directed Whip It. She went behind the camera, directed that roller derby movie. And we got Nikki Caro, who doesn't make enough movies. She made The Zookeeper's Wife. That was her last movie. She made North Country, which wasn't very good, but she directed Whale Rider right out of the gate, and that is a phenomenal movie. Gillian Armstrong, terrific director of Little Women, Death Defying Acts. Here's one, Dan. Martha Coolidge.
You know, I did not realize, I have not seen any other of her films, but she's made one of my favorites.
Yeah, she made Real Genius. She made Valley Girl, which is also a classic. She did Lost in Yonkers and Material Girls as well. But Real Genius is that's her masterpiece.
It is pure genius.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, we got to hit the news. What the hell am I doing? I'm just yapping away. Just start talking about Real Genius, Dan, and I don't care about commercials. And
I was about to jump in on that. That's a great movie. Oh, it's news time.
It is news time. Maybe we can talk a little more about Real Genius after we break for the news, which is next. All right. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. Vic, you could hear us when we were talking?
Yeah, I did. And I didn't want any bad words to go out, so I thought
yeah,
I'd just mention
you.
It.
Thank you. No, do we know
I hit my mic button as opposed to
the intercom?
The intercom.
Okay, all right.
Button.
Okay. I was like, because that's going to be an issue if that was.
Right.
I was saying, man, because there are times when, you know, when we talk to each other off the air, we do use some words that FCC would not be happy about. Every once in a while. Vic, you don't. You're as clean as the winter snow.
We'll go with that. I try to be, but you know.
Well, we were just talking about how the fact that the Hamp and OB show with Kaz is on CLTV, and I didn't know it was simulcast on CLTV, which is cool. So, like after the game on Sunday, you can turn on CLTV and see the guys. And I didn't know they worked out of this studio. Which they showed footage and I was like, oh look, it's this.
Because they did operate out of the other studio that Monday night game or that Sunday night game.
They did, yeah. Because remember, because OB couldn't find his way. How the hell do you get back to the studio? He couldn't find his way back to the studio. But no, it looked like they were in here. Unless maybe I was looking, I don't know. But it looked like they were in here because Rick was right behind them. You know what I mean? Like it looked like the three of them were sitting here, and Rick was right where you are.
So. I don't know where they do it from. I usually get here right after they're walking out of the building. I usually run into them as they're walking out of the building, so I'm not sure exactly.
Well, the two times we followed them, because it was after like a couple of night games, they were in A, not D. They weren't in here. They were in A. So I just was. That was the observation that I made that I was trying to talk to Dan about. I don't think I was going to swear.
I mean, Ed's nickname does involve a swear word, but, you know.
Yeah. It's true. Okay, let's see. We got some texts coming in here. 708 area code. Jane Campion, the piano is a superb film. Don't think she's done much work lately. Oh, I just was talking about Jane Campion. She did Top of the Lake, which is phenomenal. If you do two seasons of Top of the Lake, great, great, great stuff. And you know why it's also great? I'll tell you why. I'll give you another reason why it's great. Because Elizabeth Moss is in it. Because Elizabeth Moss is the lead. No, but Jane Campion did that. And Michael in Iowa says Barbara Streisand is a good director, too. She directed Yentl, Prince of Tides, and The Mirror Has Two Faces. Yes, she did. And I didn't like any of those movies. Yentl's okay. But Prince of Tides, Nick Nolte's really good in The Prince of Tides. Mirror Has Two Faces. Isn't The Mirror Has Two Faces, that's Jeff Bridges, right? Isn't it Jeff Bridges? Or am I nuts?
You are correct.
Okay. So, you know, Tim says, I'm with you, Nick. I thoroughly enjoyed Across the Universe, too. Oh, good. Look, I'm not alone. Me, Sergio, and Tim can all hang out in a room and watch it. I back Across the Universe. I do. I love that movie. I made Heather, my ex, see it twice in the theaters. I was like, come on, let's go see it again. She's like, all right, whatever. It's a long movie, too. It's like 2 hours and 25 minutes long, too. I think Beatle fans, I don't understand why Beatle fans didn't love that movie, because the versions of the songs were great. Really great. All right, let's see. Who else do we have here? Betty Thomas. Betty Thomas, who, you know, as you know, or maybe you don't know, started out here in Chicago at Second City. She worked at Second City and was on Hill Street Blues. Betty Thomas was one of the stars of Hill Street Blues. She plays a stripper in Used Cars. And then she went on to direct. She directed The Late Shift, that terrific HBO movie about the late night wars between Leno and Letterman. Have you seen that movie, Dan?
I have not.
Kathy Bates, phenomenal in it. What's his name? The guy from one of the judges in Pitch Perfect, who's in everything. John
Michael Higgins.
Yeah, he plays Letterman. And then what's the guy's name? Daniel Roebuck plays Leno. It's really good. It's a really, really good movie with a phenomenal performance from Kathy Bates. Kathy Bates is so good in it. She plays one of the producers and the manager of Jay Leno, and she's phenomenal in it. So that's a great one. She also directed Dr. Doolittle, which we don't need to really discuss. She directed 28 Days, John Tucker Must Die, but she directed Private Parts. So that's it right there. She gets a pass, a lifetime pass. Private Parts. Vic, have you seen Private Parts? The Howard Stern?
No.
Oh, it's so,
I know you love that movie.
It's so good.
I should watch that.
You should. Yeah, I couldn't watch it between 2008 and 2010. There was a specific reason why I couldn't watch it between 2008 and 2010.
Is this a bad time to explain why?
The character that Paul Giamatti plays in the movie,
yeah,
is the program director of WANBC.
Mm.
And he's not a very, in the movie, he's like the bad guy. They call him Pig Vomit. And he was in the book, he's Pig Virus. But in the movie, for some reason, they changed it to Pig Vomit. He always tried to get Howard fired. His job was to make life absolutely miserable for Howard Stern. Between the years of 2008 and 2010, in real life, that guy was our boss.
That's right. I do remember that. So,
it wasn't a pleasant experience. It wasn't. And then he's passed away, you know, and so not to speak ill of the dead, seriously, because he died young and he was a father, and that's not cool. But it was not a pleasant experience working for that guy at all. And so I couldn't even, like, it would pop up on cable, Dan. And I love Paul Giamatti. He's one of my favorite actors of all time, and he's great in the movie. But it was like, it got to the point where anytime it came on cable and I would flip it over, especially if it was the WNBC scene where he's giving them line readings on how to say the call letters, I would just get the chills. And I'd be like, ah! And I'd have to change it. Like, I came across a horror movie that scared the hell out of me. It was like, you know what it was? I would throw the remote into the kitchen next to your pet cemetery because that's how much it scared me.
PTSD.
So, but I can watch it now. From. I can watch it now and laugh. But Betty Thomas directed that movie. She did a great job with that movie. And Dan, it's very the Late Shift movie, very similar in tone and style to, you know, because it's a show business film, and it's very, very similar in tone and style. That's why she got the gig. That's why she got Private Parts is because Howard Stern saw the Late Shift and loved it and said, "I want her to direct the movie." So, Tamara Jenkins, who directed The Savages, Slums of Beverly Hills, and Private Life, she's got Private Life is the movie that I just saw that she directed. Speaking of Paul Giamatti and Catherine Hahn, Molly Shannon, and John Carroll Lynch, really good movie. It's on Netflix. Eric didn't give it a great review. He said it was okay, but he's wrong. It's great. so it's on Netflix now. Elizabeth Banks directed Pitch Perfect 2, Dan, as you know.
I do.
Did you see Pitch Perfect 3?
Yeah, we rented it a couple weekends.
What did you think?
A weekend away. You know, like most of those sequels, it was pretty obvious this was just an excuse for them to go overseas and go to 18, right. You know, 8 different countries. It was fine. You know, it was better than I was expecting. I went in really low bar.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the fact that it was, you know, sweet and not overly ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, all right, I appreciate
it. The other thing about those movies, about all three of those, the first one is legitimately really good. Like the first,
yes.
And the second one's pretty solid.
Yeah, it's
too.
Fine. Yeah.
But the thing about it is that how do you not like those actresses? Do you know what I mean? It's like everybody right. in that movie, you know? I mean, if you put Anna Kendrick in a movie and you automatically you like her. I don't care, you know, really, I don't care. Like, she's amazing in A Simple Favor. She's amazing in it. It's a great performance. And she works really, really well with Blake Lively in that movie. But she's great in it. And Edge of 17. Hailee Steinfeld. Love her. Have you seen this Bumblebee thing that she's in?
No.
Bumblebee. It's a Transformers movie.
Oh, I did not realize that she was part of that.
She's the lead in it,
was when they were trying to make a Transformers universe, which I think is now not going to happen. But
yeah,
this one was already in production.
I think so because I didn't know what Bumblebee was, and I saw the trailer for it, and I saw she was in it, and I was like, oh, she's great. I'm trying to remember who directed Edge of 17. I think was it a woman? Or am I? Maybe it wasn't. I can't remember who directed Edge of 17. I think it might be a woman. And I've seen that movie 9,000 times. And I
Kelly
can't,
Freeman Craig.
That's right. It was a woman. There you go. So that fit right in with the conversation because that's a great movie. Catherine Hardwick directed Plush and Red Riding Hood. Jennifer Lynch directed Chain, Girls, 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 and Hiss. Angelica Houston, Bastard Out of Carolina. Boy, I forgot about that movie. Oh, my God, that movie. That's a tough movie to sit through. I totally forgot about that movie. Tamara Davis. Or Tamara Davis. She directed Crossroads with Brittany.
Hmm.
And Half Baked. She's responsible for one of the best pot movies ever made. Lena Dunham is on here. She directed Tiny Furniture, creative nonfiction, of course, created Girls. She also created this new show that we talked about the other night yesterday morning with Dan Feinberg, Camping, which I'm going to watch this weekend. So, all right, some great female directors right there, And cheers to Paul Feig for creating this program for female directors and encouraging women to make more movies because we need more ladies out there to make movies, and a lot of them are great.